Okay, there is the geographical knowledge, the basis for much of Americans' geographical knowledge there. That is the theme to the online board game Risk. That's how most people know where Asia is, right? And Australia and Africa. We're going to be talking about China and the U.S. playing war games, not Risk, but games in hopes of avoiding real-life war in just a few minutes. But we want to remind you, it is tax day. If you've already finished, relax. If you haven't, you need to get to the post office. We're going to be talking about that and Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown's idea of tax reform. But we want to ask you, what one thing would you like the government to do with what you've paid in taxes this year? Now that you've paid your dues, what one thing would you like to give yourself? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to thetakeaway.org. In the meantime, here's some of our news headlines at 31 minutes past the hour. Anders Breivik is defending his massacre of 77 people last year in Norway, saying the rampage was, quote, the most spectacular attack since World War II. In day two of his terrorism trial, the 33-year-old lashed out at Norwegian and European governments for embracing immigration and multiculturalism. Breivik confessed to the crime but has pleaded not guilty, citing self-defense. Georgia's governor has signed legislation requiring welfare applicants to pass a drug test before receiving their benefits. Republican Nathan Deal says it will ensure that benefits are used for their intended purpose and not to subsidize drug use and criminal activity. The Southern Center for Human Rights plans to file a lawsuit over the measure, but not until it goes into effect in July. And Japan is funneling $60 billion to the International Monetary Fund. The country's finance minister says it's a move to help the IMF deal with the European financial crisis. That announcement comes this week at the G20 in Washington. Japan will become the first non-European nation to make a contribution. In the markets, Asian markets are down. European indices are up. Wall Street futures are up. The Dow starts at 12,921. The S&P at 1,369. The Nasdaq at 2,988. This is The Takeaway. You can reach us at facebook.com/TheTakeaway.
The symbolic ceremony celebrating China's rise to become a world power sounds like this. The national anthem of the People's Republic of China, accompanying thousands of soldiers, tanks, and aircraft during a two-hour celebration in Beijing back in 2009, commemorating 60 years of communist rule. The Chinese take their national history very seriously, and the Chinese media speak constantly of a coming showdown between China and the United States to settle the question of who is the biggest world power once and for all. What would such a showdown look like? Better question, how would we develop a policy to avoid a confrontation altogether? It's a key question for the future security of the world, and our next guest has been working on it. James Lewis is a former diplomat and director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank in Washington, D.C. His team has been working closely with a Chinese think tank, playing out various alarming simulations harmlessly as games, with the hopes of learning lessons to avoid real-life war. James Lewis, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
So how does the gaming strategy that you're developing here with your Chinese counterparts echo what went on during the Cold War? And how does it learn lessons, hopefully, from the Cold War in avoiding the kinds of confrontations that lasted for 50 years between the U.S. and the Soviet Union?
What we found during the Cold War is actually talking to the other side helps to reduce tension. It helps to avoid the chance that they'll misperceive what you're doing or they'll miscalculate because they don't understand what the risks are, what the benefits of cooperation are. So we're trying to build on existing models that people used in the past to find a way to cooperate better in reducing risk.
Now, the classic film, in many ways in our time, it's a silly film, War Games, talks about computer-mediated nuclear war between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. The games that you play, I suspect, would be far more complex in the sense that we're not necessarily talking about a nuclear confrontation. We're talking about confrontation on multi-levels between the U.S. and China.
No, we try and keep them simple. I mean, we want the games to succeed, right? And the focus is on how the two sides can cooperate to avoid conflict, to deal with a common problem, or to avoid having something escalate into a bigger war.
And is it fair to call these war games, or are you more are they more peace games in the sense that you lose if there's war that breaks out?
Well, if you were an arms controller, you would call them simulations, not war games, because it doesn't involve moving tanks. It's not Risk. It's not Stratego. It's two sides sitting down almost in a seminar and saying, if this happened, here's what we would do. What would you do? Who would we call? You know, what would we say if we were going to react to something? How would we interpret it? So it's more working through the steps each government would take to figure out a way to avoid a bigger conflict.
In the work that you've done, James Lewis, how have the vulnerabilities of the Chinese revealed themselves? In other words, what interest from the point of view of the Chinese is really a deal breaker? It's non-negotiable. The Chinese must have certain things this particular way. And how do you work around that?
You know, the thing that is important to them is the survival of their government, right? And we have objections to that government at times, but it's their position. They're saying, you know, you can't do something that would undermine our government. And we say the same. The other part that's been sticky, of course, is explaining to them about First Amendment rights and saying there's no way the U.S. will ever constrain speech. And so both sides kind of come in with those two notions. We're always going to be for free speech. They're going to be protecting their government. We're going to protect our government, too. Take those off the table, though. You want something that says, here we are in a crisis situation. Who do I call? How do I react? What do I do?
We've seen China cooperating with the U.S. and other nations in confronting North Korea in its latest launch of a missile and a possibly imminent nuclear test. Do you think these games give a sense that North Korea might be a place or a crisis point where there would be cooperation?
You said in your opening remarks, there's a little bit of ambivalence in China, really at all levels. Are they cooperating with the U.S.? Are they competing with us? Is, you know, some sort of conflict inevitable? They're going through the same kind of debates that we're going through. It's a more open society than you might think. But in general, the officials we've dealt with realize that cooperation is the best approach, that there is little for them to gain if they go into a conflict with the U.S.
Is there a territoriality component here in a sense that we're competing on some level for control of the Pacific? What about the notion of containment that the Chinese often use? They believe that the United States is trying to contain China, keep it boxed up.
Well, you know, I've tried to talk them out of that containment notion, and there's just a high level of distrust really on both sides. So they're, you know, persuaded secretly that we're trying to contain them, and you can go through it over and over again. We're not trying to contain you. The part that's beginning to resonate there and hopefully here is this isn't the Cold War. In the Cold War, we were separate from the Soviet Union, and China and the U.S. have economies that are so intertwined that it's hard to think of them functioning with one attacking the other. If we were to turn out all the lights in China, you know, what would happen would be American consumers wouldn't be able to get electronic products. That's not in our interest. If they were to attack the U.S., they'd lose all their huge investments here. They realize that. So both sides kind of step back and say, you know what? We depend on each other. And it's that interdependence theme that's really interesting.
And that's the huge takeaway here. There is no conceivable scenario that would mirror the Cold War because of this interdependence economically that you describe. I'm wondering, over the course of your work, what have you discovered about the U.S., its own intransigence, its non-negotiable positions? You've mentioned the First Amendment. Put that aside for a moment. But are there any sort of sensitivities that the U.S. has, maybe about remaining the number one superpower, that makes us a more difficult negotiating partner?
No, I think most of us don't worry about remaining the number one superpower. When you go to China, you realize, you know, they're not as big a threat as they might look like from the outside. The thing that's hard for us is avoiding falling into that Cold War mode of thinking that China is the Soviet Union and we're in a Cold War. We're in a war with China. I hear that a lot. We're not in a war with China. It's not the Cold War. It's not the Soviet Union.
Who's listening to you in the White House or in the policy halls of government?
That's always a good question. Shows like this help. You know, you want to get the word out that, yes, there's a lot of tension. Yes, there's a lot of distrust. But there's things we can do to reduce that and manage the situation to hopefully a better outcome sometime in the future.
Well, James Lewis, if you've got an open seat around the table sometime, give me a call. I'd love to play.
Will do.
James Lewis, former diplomat and director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, think tank on gaming to avoid confrontation between the U.S. and China. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.